Pues destacó como reto inmediato el acabar con la explotación de jornaleros del campo y extender un programa de ayuda a mujeres embarazadas de familias pobres. Pepe Fruto reporta.
Hemos vuelto a recuperar la iniciativa política. La casa de gobierno no la manejan las corporaciones. La casa de gobierno, hay una presidenta con la cual cada uno de ustedes tiene todo el derecho a tener sus diferencias, y de hecho, eso es la política. Las diferencias, las diferentes visiones, las diferentes propuestas. Lo que no se puede hacer es renunciar a la política para entregarle el sistema de decisiones a las corporaciones.
La presidenta Cristina Fernández llamó a no entregar las decisiones del país a las corporaciones. Fue durante la apertura de sesiones del Congreso donde hizo un repaso de los logros de su gobierno y de las virtudes del modelo vigente desde 2003. En la hora y media que duró su discurso, la presidenta destacó el crecimiento económico sostenido, el récord de reservas monetarias, el avance de la producción industrial, el récord en la producción de granos, la alta inversión en educación que hace el Estado, la reactivación de la empresa estatal Aerolíneas Argentinas, los aumentos a los jubilados, la asignación universal por hijo, la ley de matrimonio igualitario y también la política de derechos humanos. Además, llamó a no utilizar el tema de la inseguridad mediáticamente con fines electorales y pidió leyes para terminar con el trabajo esclavo.
Y realmente es importante que leyes de trabajo domiciliario, que leyes como la que hemos remitido al Congreso de Peón Rural para modificar esto y para que finalmente el control no esté en propio cabeza de los dirigentes sindicales que parecen no haber controlado demasiado como estaba la servidumbre humana en su sector, vuelvan al Estado, porque debemos terminar con esta verdadera vergüenza que es el trabajo esclavo. El trabajo esclavo.
Y luego de llamar a no entregar las decisiones del país a las corporaciones, la presidenta respondió a la corporación mediática encabezada por los diarios Clarín y La Nación y descartó que vaya a buscar una reforma constitucional que instaure la reelección presidencial indefinida. Incluso aclaró que ni siquiera dijo todavía si va a ir por su reelección este año.
Si no he logrado una minoría simple para una norma que han tenido todos los presidentes argentinos, como es el presupuesto, ¿a quién se le ocurre lo de la reforma constitucional? Pero además, ¿alguno me ha escuchado a mí decir que voy a ir a la reelección en el 2011? Así que no se hagan los rulos.
Y en el ámbito social, la presidenta anunció que la asignación universal por hijo se extenderá desde mayo de este año a las embarazadas a partir de la semana 12 del embarazo a cambio de la obligación de realizarse los controles médicos. Por último, la presidenta Cristina Fernández pidió que el Congreso trate los varios proyectos de ley que enviará este año y destacó como prioritarios la nueva ley penal tributaria, la iniciativa para frenar la extranjerización de la tierra y una nueva ley de adopción.
La revista de periodismo investigativo Contralínea reporta que, bajo la presidencia de Felipe Calderón, México se ha convertido en el tercer país más endeudado con el Banco Mundial, solo por debajo de Brasil y China. La deuda de la nación mexicana sería de unos 12.500 millones de dólares. Contralínea dice que los últimos préstamos se pactaron a la par de una estrategia elaborada por la institución financiera en la que delineó recomendaciones a seguir por el gobierno de Calderón. La periodista Erika Ramírez de Contralínea señala que en otro préstamo previo, el Banco Mundial había reprobado la existencia de la compañía pública Luz y Fuerza del Centro y un año después la administración panista liquidó a la empresa.
Pues mira, nos encontramos con los datos, la noticia de que México se ha convertido en el tercer cliente más importante para el Banco Mundial, con una deuda acumulada de 12.500 millones de dólares, es decir, unos 150.500 millones de pesos. Esta deuda se adquiere o se aumenta en los últimos años que tiene, en los últimos ejercicios fiscales con el presidente Felipe Calderón Hinojosa. Los préstamos se pactaron a la par de que el Banco Mundial elabora una estrategia en la que marca recomendaciones al gobierno de Felipe Calderón. Entre las recomendaciones encontramos que reprueba en la operación de Luz y Fuerza del Centro, y un año después la administración panista la liquida. Esto nos da como lectura que, bueno, México está adquiriendo deuda a través de que se le dicten políticas públicas, económicas y sociales en el país. Actualmente son 12.500 millones de dólares. Ellos dicen, tuvimos la oportunidad de hablar con Harold Bedoya, que es el gerente de operaciones del Banco Mundial para México y Colombia, y él nos dice que México se ha convertido en uno de los países o de los clientes más importantes para este banco. Esto se nos hace un eufemismo, ¿no? Porque, bueno, nosotros lo traducimos a que México se ha convertido en el tercer país más endeudado para con la institución. Esto es a través de proyectos, compromisos que adquiere México, y bueno, desde que Calderón asume la presidencia han sido unos 8.226 millones de dólares, aproximadamente 99.123 millones de pesos, que el país se ha adjudicado en estos cinco años de ejercicio de Calderón Hinojosa. Todos los proyectos tienden a pagarse en distintos tiempos y, bueno, el año máximo que alcanzan son de 25 años, ¿no? Dependiendo de cuánto dure el esquema crediticio. En esta administración encontramos, nosotros hicimos el análisis de todos los proyectos que se han comprometido en estos últimos años de Calderón Hinojosa, y encontramos que son, no es cierto, del gobierno panista, desde que Vicente Fox asumió el poder, son 44 proyectos a desarrollar en distintos sectores. Estos son en el sector rural, en el sector económico, en el sector productivo, en fin. 10 de estos proyectos solo se comprometieron en el gobierno de Vicente Fox. En 6 años se comprometieron 10 proyectos. En lo que va del gobierno de Felipe Calderón son 34, por lo que se asume una deuda mayor a los 8.000 millones de pesos. En este listado de proyectos encontramos que la mayoría de ellos están asignados al combate a la pobreza, cosa que a nosotros se nos hace contradictoria, porque vemos que cada vez, cada año, aumentan las cifras en este rubro, ¿no? Cada vez en México la polarización es más grande, cada vez hay más mexicanos que tratan de salir a buscar nuevas oportunidades al extranjero, principalmente a Estados Unidos, y cada vez hay más delincuencia y personas o adolescentes que se unen a los grupos de la delincuencia organizada porque no tienen mayores oportunidades, ¿no? Entonces, todo esto, nosotros nos preguntamos, ¿de qué sirve? ¿De qué sirve una deuda? ¿De qué sirve que se adquieran compromisos para este tipo de proyectos si no los vemos aterrizar en nuestro entorno social?
Para escuchar la entrevista completa con Erika Ramírez de la revista Contralínea, te invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com. El reporte completo de Ramírez puedes leerlo en contralinea.com.mx. Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de la Radio del Sur, Radio Nacional de Venezuela, Telesur, el diario La Jornada, Radio de Naciones Unidas y de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez y nuestro equipo de producción, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, a special discussion on a number of issues, beginning with the Broadway-Brommer bike path or bike connection. who knows, we may wander into other areas, La Bahia Project, police department affairs, who knows, a possibility for a Libyan delegation of freedom fighters to advise Santa Cruz on how to deal with its tyrannical city council. You name it, we're going to kick some things around. And with our special guest, who will introduce herself right now, hopefully on this rather peculiar-looking mic.
Okay, I just talk into there.
You just talk into there as long
as
you can't get
my name
close.
Hi, my name is Jean Brocklebank, longtime Santa Cruz resident, and speaking on behalf of Friends of Arana Gulch.
And you also have a Confederate lurking in the background. Who is this individual?
This is Michael Lewis.
Associated with you in certain ways, I understand.
Yes. We're newlyweds. We've only been married for 10 years.
Ah, there you are. Well, I don't believe in marriage, so we'll just ignore that particular aspect of your relationship.
You must know this. The first writings of Michael that I read that impressed me and why I wanted to meet him were his writings on anarchism as a function of Edward Abbey, a shared author who we both enjoyed. And Michael had read Abbey's thesis on anarchism, and he started talking about it on the Internet. And I read his writings, and I thought, this is a man I'd like to meet. Cool enough.
That's all I can say.
And
who knows? We may have to grill him on his questionable beliefs, possibly for government purposes. You never can tell just who may be lurking here in the area. Take Back Santa Cruz has a way of dealing with your kind.
Bless their hearts.
Actually, I don't want to speak for them. They've been invited, of course, into the studio, but so far they've not accepted the invitation. Anyway, folks, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, if you are streaming or listening to us stream, I should say. And this is a two-hour show normally concerned with civil rights for poor and homeless people, police abuse. We also cover local issues, and one of those is, of course, some local controversies. I'm going to try to attempt in my contorted way to link this issue to poor people, and no doubt Micah Posner, who's also due here, to take actually the separate, the other side, the opposite side of the issue. I guess the initial...
The other path.
The other path, or they should say the main path, the connector path. He will be just supporting a bicycle path through Broadway, the Bromar Broadway Bicycle Connector, as some call it, and... It's not been in the papers much recently, because I guess there was a Coastal Commission decision, there was a court decision last year. Maybe we should ask you, Gene, to give a little update. And, of course, Mike is welcome to speak on this issue, too, if he wants, about the background, understanding, of course, that you're heavily biased, and no doubt will have to be corrected by Micah in great detail.
Well, we're proudly biased, and... We're also prone to discuss facts and information, as well as in our passion and our opinion. But the reason that it hasn't been in the paper very much, although there's probably going to be something in the Sentinel tomorrow, because the Regional Transportation Commission had a meeting this morning and made a decision about extending yet again reprogramming funding for the Broadway-Bromar Transportation Project. Let's call it that.
Why don't you discuss what that project is and then talk about this most recent decision.
Okay. In 1995, the City Council was approached by some members of People Power, amazingly enough, about putting a bicycle trail through the Arana Gulch Green Belt to connect Broadway and Bromar. And the city had a biotic assessment done, and in 1996 they decided this might be a good idea and started to develop an environmental impact assessment for it. So that's, what, 15 years ago? Close? Yeah, more or less 12, 13, 14, 15 years ago. Almost from the very beginning, there was opposition to doing that because the Arana Gulch Greenbelt is a little tiny. It's the smallest of the greenbelts in Santa Cruz. It's a little over 60 acres. Poganip is hundreds of acres. Moore Creek is hundreds of acres. And this is a little tiny sort of island of biodiversity on the east side of the city, and the only green belt that the east side of the city has. Sometimes we felt like the stepchild of the city of Santa Cruz, because the west side had Poganip, huge, Moore Creek, huge. We have little tiny itty-bitty around a gulch.
60 acres, of course, is what, 60 square blocks, would you say?
Let's see. How do we describe that so that your listeners can get a sense of it? 60, well, that'll work. I can't visualize 60 square
well,
blocks.
Well, 15 blocks by 15 blocks.
Yeah.
It's less. I'd say 15 by, well, 20 by 20 is 400 square acres.
Right. Yeah.
So it would be maybe 25 by 25 blocks. It's actually quite a sizable piece of property.
67 acres? Wait a minute,
67 acres.
67 acres.
No, that's much less. That would be 67 acres. Would be 67 square blocks. It would actually be about... No, that's about 8 by 8 square blocks. Sorry.
Yeah.
My apologies. 8 by 8 blocks.
Okay, yeah. It's pretty tiny. And in fact, one can walk from the north edge of the green belt to the south edge of the green belt in less than 10 minutes. And that's if one is just kind of sauntering along. So that's pretty tiny. Anyway, that was in 1998, and opposition was already... starting to occur.
What was this path that was proposed? Again, be specific
about what it is. I'm going to be specific. It's not a path. There are paths in Arana Gulch Greenbelt right now, and anyone can go to the Greenbelt, and they will see a path. In one's mind, a path is like a little dirt pathway that one walks along, 2 feet wide maybe, 1 feet wide, maybe 3 feet wide, but this is a path. The Broadway-Bromer connection is a paved, basically 12-foot wide route, 8 foot of asphalt, 2 feet of gravel on either side, 2 feet of gravel shoulders, for a total width of 12 feet. So if anybody's at home and they have a measuring tape handy, they can grab it out of the drawer and have your friend hold on one end and you hold on another end and pull it out 12 feet. That's the width of the so-called path. So it's, you know, path sounds so organic and, you know, it does, but it's not.
Path is pretty, I mean, the 12 feet is pretty wide.
Yeah, it is. I think it's wider than this room.
It's about, I'd say, from that wall to Made in China over there, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little less.
Yeah. So there was opposition to, and not only the path. Oh, Mike is here. Shall I wait?
Well, why don't you finish up? Micah can hear as I speak. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. He was asking me to describe as accurately as I could the width of the bike route through Arana Gulch, and I was explaining that it's 8 feet wide, paved with 2 foot gravel shoulders on either side for a total disturbance of the soil of the place of a 12-foot width. And that's where we... Should I stop?
Let me introduce Micah here.
Yeah.
Micah, you've been on the show before. You are, of course, a notorious people power person. Perhaps not as notorious as I am, but I'm not a people power person. You're here. How much time have both of you got, I should ask, before we even go any further?
I have a full hour.
How about you, Micah?
I could do that if it seemed like... Till 7 o'clock sharp.
Okay, well then, why don't you begin, Gene, by talking about your credentials? You've already mentioned that you're a Sierra Club activist. Friends of Arana Gulch is, of course, the website you referred me to earlier to take a look at.
Yeah.
Is there anything more you want to say about your credentials, why people should believe anything you say?
Well, my number one credential is that I'm a scientist by training.
What kind of scientist?
Biologist, have a degree from UCLA and a degree from UCSC in environmental studies. So, and the only reason I mention that is not to tout my degrees, but I want your listeners to know that I'm a scientist by nature. And scientists don't do beliefs. scientists. Science does evidence, substantiation, facts.
But we'll try to hold you to that.
Yeah. Okay. And also, the other credential that I hold, I'm not a Sierra Club activist. I have been a member of the Sierra Club since 1972, mm-hmm. when I was a sweet young 27-year-old mother in western Montana and wanted to save the national forest from the chainsaws of the U.S. Forest Service.
And then you learned the true nature of the reformist Sierra Club, eh?
I'm speaking tonight not for the Sierra Club.
But from your own perspective.
From my perspective and for friends of Verana Gulch. And the only reason I bring up the Sierra Club membership is because many times in public testimony on this particular controversial issue, many times people who are speaking on behalf of the Broadway Bromer Transportation Project through Verana Gulch will say, I am a Sierra Club member. And I wanted to make clear to your listeners that the official position of the local Santa Cruz group of the Ventana chapter of the Sierra Club is in opposition and has been for years.
Is that before or after the recent election?
That is the official position uh-huh. of the Santa Cruz group of the Sierra Club, and it's based on national policy and chapter.
We're going to get to that. Let's have Mike introduce himself, because this is going to be a controversy, too, because there was a recent election where some accused People Power of stacking the deck, ripping off. Well, we won't get into that. Let's avoid such inflammatory rhetoric, fun as it may be for us talk show hosts. Anyway, Micah, who the heck are you? Why should we believe anything you say?
Well, I'm the director of People Power. And I think people should believe me because we have such great members in People Power, really caring, smart, responsible people. And the members have taken upon it themselves to create this organization. So we have 500 members in Santa Cruz County. And they all either pay money or do volunteer time, or a lot of them do both, to keep the organization going and do research and get involved with projects. And so I'm the spokesperson for that organization, which is focused on sensible transportation and sustainable transportation in Santa Cruz County. Our sort of logo and first reason for existence are bicycle projects, although we have branched out. We're working with Gene, actually, and other activists in trying to stop the Highway 1 widening boondoggle. We have a recent victory of working with the county to buy the rail line. It looks like that's going to happen.
Yep.
So we work on a variety of issues, but, you know, definitely bicycles are near and dear to our hearts. We view ourselves as an environmental organization in that we're very concerned, and a lot of the reason we ride bicycles is to affect human culture and make it more sustainable with reference to the environment.
I asked Gene earlier to... First of all, I'm also going to ask you to both give references where people can go to get...
First, I'll turn up my mic so people can hear me. That would be useful. I'm going to ask you to give references so people can go to websites to get different perspectives on this particular issue, which you disagree on, the question about building a Bromer Broadway bike connector, trail, path, freeway, whatever you want to call it, you know.
I just heard Jean call it a pass, so maybe we'll stick to that.
Right. Although she was pointing out that may be a deceptive label for those who are the opponents, certainly, or perhaps deceptive generally, who knows. And if you want to go to People Power, that's one website. Just Google for People Power Santa Cruz. Another is Friends of Verana Gulch, which I just Googled for, but it's R-A-N-A, not R-A-E-N-A or R-E-N-A-R.
Oh, that's why you said arena earlier.
You're dealing with a man who's not that much of an environmentalist, I have to admit. But that's where you go. You go to those two websites to get different arguments around this issue, which you're going to be now hearing from both these folks. Since you talked about it a little bit earlier, Gene, why don't I give Micah a chance to discuss. And the question I asked Gene was, I didn't really ask her to go into her details of the argument for or against it, but actually what the issue is and why it's coming up now.
All right. Well, it's a really interesting issue, and I think on the plus side, it can be an interesting conversation among different people that care about the environment, because we have two important priorities that are rarely in conflict but are in conflict over this project. So one priority is to protect open space and habitat, especially sensitive habitat, especially habitat that has some bearing on endangered species. So that's an important value, and I really appreciate that environmental organizations have fought hard for that. And then the other value is to affect human culture. In this case, to get people the heck out of their cars, because human culture is obviously a huge problem with reference to global warming and different types of pollution and congestion and pretty much everything else. And so usually those goals are completely in tandem. In this case, we have to make some degree of priority. Now, as Gene said, you got to look at your science, too.
We're not getting yet into the argument about what the difference of opinion is, but rather why is this issue coming up right now, and what is the issue?
That's the issue, because people care very passionately about both of those things.
The issue, though, specifically has to do with this path.
The issue has to do with this path, because this path would be... Okay, let me try
this 12-foot-wide concrete asphalt path.
No, it's an 8-foot-wide asphalt
path. There's a difference already.
Right.
Okay, so...
So the reason there's a disagreement is because the path would have a really excellent effect on human culture, and that it would... I'm going to present both the good...
I do want to hear that, but I want to hear, first of all, what the path is that's being proposed, long it is, how much it's going to cost, why it's coming up now.
Right, okay.
That's the issue.
Okay. So the path is a little over a mile. I think it's 1.4.
Closer to a mile,
yeah. And it includes a bridge that would go on a public easement pretty much to the end of Broadway through what is now a church parking lot onto a plateau, which is it's called the Aronic Gulch, but it's confusing for people because the issue is more the plateau that's between two gulches. And the path would travel through the plateau and then down into the east end of the harbor, where it would sort of be located along the dry dock and skirt along one of the roads.
No, not really. It'll have to cross around a creek.
It would cross around a creek at the very edge of the paved harbor area.
Is that accurate, Jane?
Not exactly. But
We'll get into that. But we're getting a general sense of what this is going to be.
Right. So from a utility for sustainable transportation, it would connect two nice, quiet, reasonable bike facilities. There's bike lanes on Broadway, and there's also other surface streets on Broadway that end actually at the end of Broadway. And then there's bike lanes on Brommer that continue to Capitola. So at the moment, on a bicycle, if you want to go east towards Live Oak or Capitola, you have to either take Soquel, which is scary, and arguably, it's just scary. I mean, that's the main problem. There's tons of cars and congestion and right turn motions. Or Murray, which is similar. It's a very busy street with lots of right turn motions, a very narrow bike lane on the bridge. So this has really been, this path would create, even though it's small, it would create a crucial link between two other bike facilities, and therefore... create a whole lot, hundreds more daily bicycle.
Why is this coming up now, and what's the status of it at the moment?
I don't think it's particularly that it's coming up now. It's been coming up
for about 15 years.
Right.
Would it be okay, Robert and Micah, both, if I commented on something that he just said in terms of accuracy? May I do that?
Are you finished with your exposition pretty much? You'll have a chance to get arguments.
Yes.
And I want you both to talk about what is in fact coming up, what has come up in the last year in terms of court decisions, what's coming up in the next year. But anyway, you want to comment on
something. And also,
Micah said.
I would like your listeners to know that, as Micah said before, we're not two enemies sitting in the same room here. This 12-foot wide room, by the way, Micah, as we described.
the room is a little wider than 12.
Yeah, we described the path as being 8 foot of paving with 2 foot of gravel shoulders on either side of the paving for a total of a 12-foot wide footprint, which I think is something architects understand.
Is that accurate, Micah?
That is accurate.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing is with regard to connecting two roadways in Santa Cruz, Broadway and Brommer, who have both of those roadways have existing bike lanes. I think it's important for people to understand that in the county of Santa Cruz, and remember, this is not just a city project, even though the city of Santa Cruz Public Works Department is leading this project proposal, that even though this is a city project, it has a city-county connection in the sense that it would end up on 7th Avenue, which is basically the cusp of the city and county. And the purpose has been stated many times to allow for an east-west connection from Live Oak to Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz to Live Oak. Mm-hmm. In the county of Santa Cruz, and I wish I had my bicycle map with me, there are not just Broadway and Bromer, there are 211 miles of bike lanes, roadways in the county. So it's not just Broadway and Bromer. 7th Avenue has bike lanes. Soquel Avenue has bike lanes, and in fact, MICA's people power is probably the reason that we have bike lanes on Soquel Avenue, because they worked for years to get them there. Mm-hmm. I know that my husband bicycles on Soquel Avenue all the time, and his remark to me is the lovely thing about it is that since there is congestion, vehicular congestion, and there is, he just kind of noodles along in his bike lane and kind of laughs to himself as the traffic sits there. So, and he never...
Coughing and choking as he goes, of course.
No, not...
He holds his breath.
Yes. So it's not just to connect Broadway and Bromer in terms of a network of roadways in this county, and this is where Micah and I absolutely agree, to make every roadway in the county of Santa Cruz, all of the existing pavement, bicycle and pedestrian friendly, because mm-hmm. my husband is a bicyclist, I am a walker.
Court decisions and Coastal Commission activity in the last year or two, or the last few years, where is it at, Micah, and is that relevant to why the issue may be, as Gina said, being mentioned in tomorrow's Sentinel?
Well, just to go back a little farther, just so people realize the history of the project, it was tossed back and forth at City Council for many years, and Gene and I have been debating it in front of different city councils over and over again. In the end, we had a unanimous vote. I think that was in 96 by that council to pass the project on. And then Friends of the Rana Gulch and I believe the Native Plant Society together sued over the EIR for the project.
Environmental Impact Report.
Environmental Impact Report, sorry.
That was 10 years later.
That was 10 years after it started being discussed by council.
Yeah.
Right. But so it went back and forth. Some councils liked it, some didn't. There was a very healthy public debate. In my opinion, public opinion slowly shifted over those years to be in favor of the bike path, which is why we got ultimately unanimous vote by the council. Anyway, so then they sued over it, which held up in court for 6 years or something.
No.
5 years?
No. We didn't sue, by the way, and here I am, the scientist coming out of me, accuracy. We did not sue the city over the Broadway-Bromer transportation project through Arana Gulch. What we sued the city on was their violation of the California Environmental Quality Act. There are certain regulations for, it's called CEQA, using an acronym, that the city did not follow in terms of a rigorous analysis of alternatives to the project. And so what we sued for was to make the city obey the law of the land, basically.
Well, the court didn't agree.
The court did not agree, and we appealed, and the Sixth District Court did not agree. We had
to do with the tar plant, right?
Well, no. The lawsuit had to do with CEQA. The tar plant is involved in all of this, but it's the tar plant.
What is the tar plant?
Before we get into the tar plant, which we should talk about for sure,
yes,
it's an important little sticky plant. But it wasn't all the. I know what you guys sued about, but I was trying to make it a little simpler for people in the audience. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were suing because you didn't like the bike path, right, in its current configuration.
California Native Plant Society, which is extremely interested in endangered and threatened plants and animals, and Friends of Arana Gulch, sued the city because they didn't follow the law. our feeling was if they had followed the law, then the city would have looked at alternatives to putting this transportation project through Urana Gulch, would have looked at real alternatives to spending the money elsewhere that would get bicyclists what they wanted without paving critical habitat of an endangered species. In other words, that particular endangered species has only one place to live, and that's in the Urana Gulch Greenbelt, whereas bicyclists have many places. They can bicycle all over the city. That plant can't live anywhere else except right there. Well, so our goal, which ultimately delayed
the
Broadway,
tar plant,
was to have the city do a real analysis of alternatives so that we could find, by we I mean everyone who cares about the things that Micah has said that we all care about, so that we could find an alternative project that would meet the goals of
bicyclists. You've
made
that point. Now, by real alternatives, I'd like, I'm going to have to ask both of you to ask if you think there are real alternatives,
right,
first of all, because that's relevant. And, you know, it's often the case that, you know, people are not entirely candid about why they're doing this, that, you know, they have an objection to it, and they're using whatever means they can, and they feel it's appropriate to give the public more time to consider it, to let essentially block it. I mean, so I'm judging of your credibility here, Gene.
You can do that, Robert.
And I will.
I'll do anything I can to stop the Broadway Broomer project.
Will you burn yourself at the city council covered with gasoline?
That,
no, you won't.
But
right.
I want...
It could
want
start a revolution. It did in Tunisia. All right, so you have a comment, Mike.
Yeah, so the reason the city won the case through two different courts is because the city did look at a long variety of alternatives. In fact, there have been different phases of this project. So it was a transportation project. The city looked at a bunch of alternatives. Then it was a management plan for the Urana Gulch as a whole, which included a transportation component. The city again looked at a lot of alternatives. So I feel like there has been an exhaustive, and I do mean exhaustive, being personally involved, look at all the alternatives. Now, that's not to say that some of them wouldn't have been reasonable. I mean, People Power came up with an alternative 15 years ago, the Don Speck Bridge, of just putting a bridge across. And,
oh, yeah.
And there was no real, I don't think there was really a good reason why that didn't go ahead. So I'm really clear the city has looked at endless alternatives. You know, is that to say that we couldn't have gotten together on one? I'm not sure. I mean, maybe if we would have been more open and people wouldn't have been as determined, we could have found one. I mean, you know, Jean just said, well, she'll try to stop the project no matter what. That's been a problem, in that everyone is theoretically interested in alternatives, but, you know, we're interested in alternatives, you know, if the other side, for lack of a better word, will get together and will agree on one. And they're sort of in the opposite situation, in my opinion. We're sort of like, well, they might take an alternative, but only if they're forced to do it or whatnot. So I'm disappointed in all of us in that we haven't come to something we could all agree on. But I don't think it's the city's fault. I think the city went through an exhaustive process, and a lot of different things have been on the table. A lot of them are not acceptable to cyclists. Not all of them. Some of them have been, but most of them do not meet the goal of the project, which is to allow people to get through this choke point. There's a real choke point here. It's not just another mile of bike path. It's a way to get people from the city of Santa Cruz out to Live Oak.
I mean, Gene has a comment.
Okay. For example, you have thousands of people riding up to the university, which is up a big hill, and the percentage of bike riding drops off dramatically as soon as you go east of the city of Santa Cruz, and that's the issue we're trying to resolve.
And give your point, but also see if you can respond to his concern.
Yeah. I have to say again to you, Robert, I really appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation with Micah and to let people know that we can have a reasoned conversation. Because I really do think that a lot of people think that we're enemies and that we don't have the ability to have a rational discourse. And so I really do appreciate this opportunity. As far as the bottleneck goes, when people come up to Frederick Street from Broadway, they have two choices right now, because it's kind of like a T. They may make a left turn and go, horrors, three blocks to Soquel Avenue, and continue along Soquel Avenue in those wonderful bike lanes that People Power provided for bicycling advocates in the city.
And that both of you use? are you both bicyclists here?
I'm a walker, but my husband bicycles Soquel Avenue all the time.
And you are a biker, Mike.
Yes.
Yeah, and he does. The other choice is instead of coming up to the basically the church parking lot and turning left and going horrors three blocks to Soquel Avenue and then proceeding along east to wherever you want to be in Live Oak, the other choice is to make a right turn and go about three blocks to Frederick Street Park, go through the park, which is a really nice, pretty little park, and come down the stairs into the upper harbor, and from there up to Broadway. Now, one of the things
you have to walk your bike that way.
There is, you know, this is funny thing.
There's
a, this is so, because this is something that People Power and we would really collaborate on. The city could spend a few hundred dollars, and instead of having one 2x10 ramp coming down those steps, they could easily reconfigure that, expand it just by a couple of feet, and make that a lot easier for people to, you, what you do is you get off your bike and you put it on this board and you walk up your bike, you walk down. I see people do this all the time. But anyway, that was another, in fact, in 1996, that was one of, remember, Micah, they had A, B, and C as alternatives. And B was that Frederick Street route. So there, yes, there's a bottleneck in that you can't just keep zooming. You have to make a right turn or a left turn and continue your journey. But it doesn't end the journey. It just changes it slightly.
We're listening to a debate between our discussion, actually, a joint investigation of the issue of the Brommer Broadway bike path. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. There is a call-in number here for people who want to interrupt this with their own thoughts, reflections, and questions. That number is 427-3772, 427-3772. You can do that if you'd like.
I think we're near the heart of the issue here.
The heart of the issue, why do you say that?
Well, because Gene's talking about the idea that there's reasonable alternatives for people. And as a bicycle advocate for 20 years, I want to explain why it's so important that we have a facility here. So when we talk about bike facilities and getting people to ride, we're looking at the design standards so that people from 8 to 80 is the vocabulary can be encouraged to ride or walk depending on, you know, what your goal is. So the current way to try to get east to Live Oak does not meet that. It's woefully inadequate. So I don't think it's reasonable to expect 8-year-olds or 80-year-olds to ride on Soquel. It's fine for me and Michael, who's Gene's husband, and a lot of other cyclists, and it's much better than it was before we started this whole debate about Broadway.
Brief answer now from Gene on that. 8-year-olds on Soquel Avenue, what do you think?
I'm a pedestrian, so I walk Soquel Avenue a lot. I have seen younger children out on their bicycles, and if they're with caring parents who are offering them a good bicycle tutorial, I think they're just perfectly safe. Yeah.
Well, I'm not.
We got to stop this fear mongering with regard to bicycling. In fact, the more bicyclists I see in bike lanes, on the roadways that I walk, the slower the traffic. In other words, as soon as bicyclists get up on the sidewalk, because they're afraid of the traffic speeds up.
And in fact, isn't it true, Micah? You've urged people to take the lane on many of these streets.
Yeah.
Sure, but they're not doing it. And that's
Let's get out there and make. Anyway, we got both a caller coming in and also Mike here who wants to say something. Let's take the caller first, Mike, and then we'll take
if
you.
Do I need these things?
You can, or you can hear it on the ear here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Micah and Gene and Robert and Mike. Hello?
Robert.
Ah, yes. Well, scope it out, Scott.
A technical thing. Your mic is really a lot louder than everybody else's.
Well, it should be, shouldn't it?
And Micah's mic is almost unhearable.
Well, isn't that good? Isn't that what you want? You don't want to hear Mike anyway.
Well, that's true.
Thanks,
but
God,
I mean,
thanks.
I just thought I'd bring this technical point up to your
I'm changing the mic. Say something, Mike, on your mic.
But one of the things I wanted to say...
Hi, Scott. Thanks for the objective tip there.
One of the things I wanted to say was that this project originally started out as a road.
Right.
That there was going to be a road connecting Broadway and Bromer. And I personally think that that is still the objective of city staff. The public works department still wants to build a road through there.
It's a moot point.
And so they have duped the bicycle community into thinking that they're building a bike path.
I don't know.
Once they get that bike path in there, they'll declare a traffic emergency and just widen the bridges, widen the path, and then we'll have this road that they've been salivating for years.
Now wait a minute, Scott. Let me interrupt you and ask, what objective evidence? We have a scientist in the studio here who's looking aghast at this idea. Gene, do you
I'm totally aghast. I said, I looked over at Mike and I said, that's not really going to happen. And Mike says, well, we're not going to let him do it. I'm shocked, but I'm naive sometimes.
No, maybe. To not believe that something like that is possible is to say you trust the city and what they're saying.
Well, there's plenty of things that are possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somewhat sympathetic to your argument because I definitely seen the city try to pull all kinds of things, Scott. However, if that's your only objection to the project,
no,
it seems like...
No, that's my first...
Okay, well, let me deal with that city objection, okay? So we're not going
to
let them...
Okay,
hold on one sec. Let me answer
all,
that objection.
Mayor
Robert
is
facilitating.
Well, can we do... Scott, I want to hear this. You mind if we do have Siri Adam responses? So you've objected to one. Scott, I mean, first of all, before even Micah responds, starting with that concern you have, Scott... It certainly is possible. You and I both have severe skepticism about the city council and particularly the city staff, whether it's under Wilson or Martine Bernal, you know. But the question is, do you have any evidence of this? I mean, is there any indication? Do you have secret memos, WikiLeaks, anything?
No.
I mean, really, I'd like to see it.
The feeling that they're using this as a stealth way of getting this road that they've been trying to get through there. But that was their original intention, and I don't think they ever dropped that original intention.
Okay, Micah, your thoughts on that?
In some ways, it doesn't matter, because we would never let them do it. So People Power and the Friends of Ronald Gulch and everyone else, we banded together originally to stop the road. We've supported stopping condos there, parks, tennis courts, soccer fields, everything. So whether there's some bureaucrat in the city that's still dreaming of building freeways around Santa Cruz is somewhat immaterial. There's not the political will to make the road, and there never will be.
Your thoughts, Scott, on that?
Okay, well, that may be.
Okay.
My other point is that I wanted to make is that there's the Murray Street Bridge, which Micah brought up as being too dangerous. Well, ever since the earthquake... That has been slated to be repaired and retrofitted with wider bike lanes, actual sidewalks, because right now even the sidewalk on that bridge is too narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And the city keeps on putting it off. Even though every year they get the funds from the state to do it, they keep on putting it off because they don't want to fix that bridge before Arana Gulch gets paved, because then it will make Arana Gulch look like it's not needed. Which, if they make a viable bikeway there, it won't be.
Gene,
so the city has been purposely not repairing this bridge. So they're putting everybody at danger because the bridge was deemed unsafe after the earthquake.
Now, which bridge again are we talking about?
We're talking about the Murray Street Bridge. It goes over the Yacht Harbor.
Okay, I got you.
And right now, another bridge here in this greater Bay Area, which was deemed unsafe during the earthquake, the Bay Bridge, will be completed before this little tiny bridge in Santa Cruz is completed, because the city is trying to maneuver to do something that isn't necessary, which is the Broadway-Bromer connection.
Okay, let's see what Gene has some thoughts on that. Go ahead, Gene.
Thanks for bringing that up, Scott. And since I just had last week an email from Mark Dettel, who is the director of Public Works, because I was wanting to know what the status was, I have been following this very carefully. Two things. Number one, The County Redevelopment Agency is working on a wonderful bicycle pedestrian portion from 7th Avenue west to Lake Avenue, which is just before you get to the, it was actually called, we call it the Murray Street Bridge, but it's really the O'Connell Bridge, a little bit of history right there, but just before that. And 3 years ago, when the County Redevelopment Agency was having its public scoping meetings to find out how people felt about that just small section, we, I believe somebody from the city was there, talking about the how it would segue and connect with the Murray Street seismic retrofit project. So and they were very,
let
very...
Let me cut through this, because okay. it's I think it's a little dense for folks. Are we saying simply that there are now plans underway to address
yes,
this issue?
Yes, and Scott Graham is absolutely correct that the city has, Public Works Department, has focused all of its energy, all of its effort, all of its angst, all of its
political
emotion,
power,
all of its political capital on Broadway Bromer, and has let the Murray Street seismic retrofit project lapse. Thank you. Year after year after year. The beauty of this retrofit project is it would create a 5-foot-wide pedestrian walkway across the bridge and 2 full 5-foot-wide bike lanes.
Now, Micah, would that resolve this issue, and would that change your mind about the Bromer Broadway bike path importance?
A little bit, and I think it's going to happen. So my standpoint about the Broadway Bromer project is that it's a great project. It will create access to an open space that there's very little access to. It will create a really nice connection between Broadway and Bromer. I'm not going to pretend that that's the only way that anyone could ever get from the city to the county. We've been really pushing for this bridge project while concurrently pushing for Broadway Bromer. We're also pushing for a rail trail connection that I'm sure Gene will bring up as another reason not to do Broadway Bromer. So when you look at successful bike pedestrian systems around the world, you have a multiple different variations, different trails and paths that go to slightly different places that serve different purposes and different populations, and that's what we need to be able to connect to Live Oak.
Scott, are there more points that you want to make?
Hold on one second. Well, can we just agree that the bridge, having a much better bridge, will make it slightly less important for Broadway Bromer, but I still think it'll be a good project.
So not significant. You would continue to support
that
project.
The whole reason the city hasn't done it yet since 1989, they had the money soon after the earthquake to actually do this retrofit.
Did People Power push for this project? It would be a question I would have.
Absolutely. For the bridge project? Absolutely.
Yes. Now, Scott, is that your impression too? And Gene, is it that People Power has put its political capital behind that project?
No, they put their political capital.
That's not true, Scott.
They even have ignored pushing for a test area for the rail trail.
That's completely not true.
Reprogramming the money for Broadway Bromer over to the rail trail, because for what it was going to cost for Broadway Bromer, you could build 4 miles of rail trail.
Not true.
You know what?
Yes, true.
Okay, now so Scott, let me get Micah to respond to that. What about that, Micah?
Well, as Gene mentioned earlier, People Power was hugely successful in getting a bike lane on Soquel, even though we knew that would in some ways deter slightly from the utility of Broadway Bromer. We have been pushing for the Murray Street Bridge. We have been the single most, you know, vital, whatever agency you call it, in promoting the rail trail. I myself actually built a gorilla trail right next to the harbor so that people could use it to get down to the harbor. So
I watched
you
build it.
There is no way that People Power would ever subjugate other really good projects because we're so hell-bent on some Broadway Bromer thing. Now, whether the city is doing that or not, you know, I hope not. I have heard other things from the city I could bring up, but in some ways it's immaterial since the city's not here. People Power supports all those projects. If they detract a little bit from Broadway Bromer, so what? They're great projects. We want to see them all go through.
Gene has something to say.
Yeah, I'm just going to quickly say I don't know. I would only have to assume if People Power has been working as hard with the city as Friends of Arana Gulch has to try and get that Murray Street Bridge project done. And I think it would be great to find out from Micah and People Power, because I'd like to use your record of working on Public Works Department to do that too. See, what I'm looking for, and I'm looking for a real collaboration between people who care about bicycling, getting people out of their cars, being able to bicycle and walk in this community without having to deal with what the entire community has been developed for up until now, which is the automobile, which I have my own reasons for not liking. But in order for collaboration to take place, one has to have the same goal. So if our goals were to get Murray Street Bridge built, and our goals were to, you asked what's happening today and what happened this morning, the Regional Transportation Commission was asked to reprogram $2.5 million of federal state money. The total Broadway-Bromer project is closer to $5 million. It's actually $4,976,000 so far.
Don't get lost in the figures.
Okay, we won't get. But anyway.
millions of government dough.
And two people spoke very passionately and seriously about asking the Regional Transportation Commission to reallocate this money to the rail corridor, which is now our rail. It's yours, Robert. It's Micah's.
Any minute, anyways.
It's mine. It's our. And that there is united and unanimous support.
So what happens?
Something we could. What we knew they would do, they voted to go ahead and reprogram the funding for Broadway-Bromer.
So they ignored the rail trail.
Well, I can't say what they ignored.
But they voted for the money to go there. That's what
I mean
by ignoring.
But my point is that People Power and Friends of Arana Gulch and Sierra Club and California Native Plant Society could make an incredible, powerful entity and a powerful argument to the City Public Works. We could get Murray Street Bridge. We could say, let's start spending some money on the rail trail.
Scott,
it's not controversial.
Right. What's your reaction to this
well,
idea
yeah,
of a coalition?
I would fully get behind anything other than paving around a gulch. One of the most environmentally unsound practices modern human society does is build roads. And it doesn't matter if it's a road for bicycles or even if it's a dirt road. Building roads is environmentally dangerous and hazardous to
the
environment.
Is it the building roads or the driving cars part?
No, it doesn't matter if there's cars on them or not.
Okay,
Micah.
Just checking.
That's why when Bill Clinton was president, he decided to make a bunch of roadless areas in the national wilderness areas because the mining companies, the logging companies all wanted to keep these roads open, and Clinton wanted them to grow back over, not just because to keep the trucks out, but because roads themselves inherently create runoff. They create places where non-native species can come in. There's all sorts of environmental detriment to building roadways.
So how about the bike path on the Great Meadow at UCSC? That's a pretty good analogy for the kind of bike path we're looking for.
Wait a minute.
It's steeper, so it's a little different. So hold on, I have a question for you because I'm following your reasoning.
We're talking about a much smaller meadow.
Right.
With an endangered species, and we're talking about
more impacted meadow.
Wait, hello, stop. And we're also talking about the habitat for that endangered species.
Talk about the
tarpaulin.
Now, plant,
right. The next hurdle that Broadway-Bromer has to go through is to pass the Coastal Commission. What's going to happen, what's happened so far at the Coastal Commission is the Coastal Commission keeps on saying this is a transportation project disguised as a interpretive trail. And so until you turn it into an interpretive trail and get rid of the transportation element,
Let me clarify what is meant, because we haven't really discussed this. The ways the city and I suppose proponents of the Broadway-Bromer link or road or trail, whatever you will, if proposed, is their justification, for example, is that the tar plant, the endangered tar plant, is best served by having this road in some ways.
No, that's a myth.
I know, but wait a minute. Isn't this the claim of some people who are advocating the Broadway-Bromer?
Don't represent me that way.
I'm not saying necessarily you, but this is what I've read elsewhere, that this is one way to get funding, for example,
to
support the tar plant and so forth.
The funding source all exists. The city has excess land along the right-of-way, which is right next to the church parking lot. They're going to sell that excess land next to the right-of-way, which is actually like five or six house lots, and they're going to use that money to restore the tar plant.
Well, the reason I mention it, Scott, is...
No, wait, don't argue with me about it.
I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm trying to explain to the community what is meant by this interpretive path claim. That's what I'm saying. In other words, I hadn't discussed it before. Gene apparently wants to say something.
No, but that was a smokescreen put up by the city.
Right, but we have to understand what it is they're talking about, Scott, in order to understand that
Scott,
it's a smokescreen.
Can I take a minute and describe it? Okay. The California Coastal Commission, under the 1972 California Coastal Act, is bound to look at projects that affect the coastal zone. Harana Gulch Greenbelt is in the coastal zone. And the only way that the California Coastal Commission, by its laws and its regulations, will allow a development project in an environmentally sensitive habitat area, which is Harana Gulch Greenbelt, because especially it's home to, it's critical habitat for an endangered species. And its associated web of life. Remember, it's not a tar plant zoo up there. The living species has many things that interacts with it. But the only way that the California Coastal Commission will allow a development project on critical habitat of an endangered species or through that critical habitat is for the project to be basically an educational opportunity for the public. And that's why the City of Santa Cruz Public Works Department changed the name of the Broadway-Bromer bicycle connection, east-west connection, a transportation project, even though it's still that name. After 15 years, it's still that name on the regional transportation budget documents. But the city changed it and started calling it an interpretive trail.
That's what I wanted to point
out. Yes. Yeah. And the way it was going to become an interpretive trail was to put signage up and have a little...
Observe the dead tar plants as
yes,
you walk by.
Yes. And so this was really... disingenuous.
Perhaps
and
a little cynical.
It was very obvious. It's kind of like putting on funny nose and glasses, right? If you put on funny nose and glasses, you're still the same person underneath, but you look a little different. And so that's why they glommed on to the interpretive trail. And not only that, and much to the dismay of our legal staff on our lawsuit, one gentleman of whom is wheelchair-bound and was incredibly distressed at what the proponents began to do.
Disability
yes,
claim,
they
but this
started,
is a way to help disabled
yes,
people get
through.
Yes, this is
the people with mobility impairment and people in wheelchairs should be able to come, et cetera, et cetera. And he was very annoyed that this was used because it was... not nice.
Let's give Mike a chance to comment on both those points.
Yeah, the second one is easier to comment on. This has been an official position taken up by the seniors committee. You went to those meetings, Gene. It was like the disabled task force,
elderly
of the,
and disabled elderly task force
of the regional
seniors
transportation
commission.
Seniors commission. So this isn't like me claiming that disabled people want access to this natural area. They really do. There's no other green belt property in the city that you can get to in a wheelchair. So it's not some sham or whatever. It is part of the reason why a trail to this area is a good idea. Similarly to the fact that the trail to the Great Meadow and UCSC, which, as I said, is the closest analogy, is great because it allows people access to that resource by bicycle that they can enjoy that meadow. You can get to the same places as you can without that trail by going on the roads, but it's a pretty light impact. It does have some negative impact on the Great Meadow, but it's a pretty light impact to allow people to enjoy being humans in this world in that meadow, which gets to the first point. There's nothing in the Coastal Act that says that a trail which is resource dependent, which is using their vocabulary, can't also serve a transportation purpose. So the trail is resource dependent in that it would allow people access to this natural resource, as I said, which right now, unless you live right around it, it's extremely hard to visit and to enjoy the Arana Gulch.
Well, let me ask you the same.
Hold on a sec.
Well,
It also so happens that while you're enjoying access to this resource, that you can get to work. And that's not a bad thing. We're not ashamed of that anyway. That's a great thing because it puts together these different parts of the environmental movement that are about access and appreciation of open space with reducing automobile trips.
And that's an important issue. And Scott, I'll take you in just a moment, but I'm going to ask you the similar question that I asked Gene. It seems to me like those who wanted to block the Broadway-Brommer connection may have been using environmental concerns as a pretext here, or the CEQA need, whereas I'm wondering if you are doing something similar, and those who support the path want to use the claim that that somehow it's you have this transportation ability along with the interpretive. But I'm wondering if both sides aren't being a little disingenuous in how they're proceeding because they have a tactical purpose, to either to press the project or to stop the project.
Well, I don't think that we've never hidden the idea that one of the main reasons we want, or probably the main reason we want the trail, is because of its transportation utility. But it's a natural sort of coupling of interests that access through natural space and ability to interact with natural space is why people ride bicycles and why they want these kind of facilities. So are we putting these two goals together to get the project passed? Absolutely, but I don't see anything contradictory or hypocritical about, putting those two goals together.
Scott, I know you wanted to say something, but I see Mike here has been making notes for the last 50 minutes, and he hasn't had a chance to say anything. Let me let him jump in with his own thoughts here. This is Mike Lewis. Is that right, Mike?
Right. Two things, Robert. One, on this, the thing that distinguishes Arana Gulch from everything else is the endangered species. And the fact that the path will be constructed across critical habitat for endangered species. And it's like back in Vietnam, we decided we would destroy the village to save it. In this case, it's destroying critical habitat to provide an opportunity to view where that habitat used to be. Okay, the other thing is, I want to give you some perspective on the idea of safety and bicycling and the perception of safety. I'm rapidly approaching 62, which is not 80, but I'm getting up there. I'm beginning to feel it. I've been riding bicycles daily for over 40 years in Nebraska and Wyoming, where the wind blows all the time, in Sitka, Alaska, where it rains 120 inches a year, in Valdez, Alaska, where it snows 50 feet every year, and in Fairbanks, Alaska, where it gets down to 60 below zero. And I have ridden my bicycle on snow-packed trails in Fairbanks at 50 and 60 below zero, with moose on the trail. When I came to Santa Cruz, I was overjoyed. This is bicycling paradise. You can ride anywhere in this town, in this county, up and down the coast on your bicycle, everywhere you want to go, immediately. There's no moose on the trail. There's cars and stuff, but they're not. The perspective of having ridden bicycles throughout the country in adverse conditions, this is paradise. And to think of, when I was in Alaska, I worked with other people, including Earth First people, to try to save millions of acres of wilderness and millions of acres of Prince William Sound from the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Here we have 67 acres, the last remaining 67 acres of this coastal prairie terrace, the only place that exists anymore, the only place where this
particular shaking his
species,
head. Mike is disagreeing
this
with
is
you.
The only place where this genetic body of tar plant grows in the universe is across here. To take anything away from that is just morally repugnant.
The tar plant does grow in other places in Santa Cruz,
but
correct?
This is a genetic species that is different than any other, and it is required for biological diversity, and that is in the biological report from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that they point that out. Yeah. So taking away any of this critical habitat from the endangered species is unconscionable, in my view, based on my experience, for the slight gain in convenience in bicycling from one part to another.
I catch your argument, and I hear you. Let me just say this, Scott, we've been at you on the line for half an hour. We're going to have to say goodbye to you so somebody else can get in.
I just want to make my last point here, Robert. You interrupted me several times.
And I may interrupt you again. Go ahead, though. Make it quick,
okay.
Please.
When the city's been in front of the Coastal Commission the last two times, they keep telling them, come back with something different. The last time they came back with the exact same project. And the Coastal Commission said, well, if you come back with the exact same project again, we will definitely vote it down. So far, the city has not, to my knowledge, changed this project in a way that would be to the liking of the Coastal Commission. So,
okay. Well, I'll pass on your point. I think Gene was whispering to Micah, and he missed what you said, but I'll pass it on.
Hopefully other people will call it.
Hopefully so. Thank you, Scott. And phone line 9 to call in is 427-3772. Micah, the point was that the Coastal Commission has told the city, change the damn plan, and they never do. And they come back with the same plan again and again. True or false?
I don't think the Coastal Commission has told the city to change the plan.
But have they come back with the same plan again and again?
Well, they've come back with it once, and it lost on a tie.
Without significant modifications.
Yeah, but it's not okay. Again and again. I mean, you know.
Several times, anyway.
No,
twice.
It's only officially been presented to the Coastal Commission once.
Oh, okay. So it's only been presented once.
Right.
Okay.
So I'm really glad we got to the endangered species, and because it seems like from both Scott and from what Michael Lewis said, that's really the heart of the issue. Because when I talked about the bike path on the Great Meadow with Scott, you know, it seemed like he wasn't in favor of ripping out. I haven't heard anyone talk about ripping out that path, for example. So let's talk a little bit about the tar plant, because it's obviously, you know, Michael Lewis says it's unethical. I've heard other people use that thing. So I want to make it clear that People Power and no one is supporting paving the habitat of the tar plant, nor is anyone supporting killing actual tar plants. So if you go out to the Arundel Gulch right now, you won't see any tar plant because that habitat hasn't been taken care of in a way that the tar plant can grow.
Gene is disagreeing with you.
It hasn't been. You would disagree. It hasn't been taken care of in a way that it can grow. I mean, neither the city nor anyone else has.
The reason you're not going to find tar plant if you go to Arana Gulch now is because you don't find tar plant until the end of July and early August.
Well, but no tar plant has been seen there for 4 years.
That's wrong. Micah,
here.
I'm glad you said that. That's absolutely wrong.
Well, that was in the Coastal Commission report.
No, it was not. Last year, in the summer season of 2010, was the first year that there was no tar plant found in Arana Gulch. There was an incredible resurgence after a really good treatment in the fall of 2006. There was tar plant in 2007, 2008. 2009. I have pictures of it,
but
and
I think Micah's point is that there has been a dropping of tar plant viability in that area.
Well,
and
one of the reasons this in 2010, and I'm not a botanist, I'm a biologist, but I'm guessing that it was a combination of factors. Number one, we had 3 years of drought. If people want to know what the tar plant is, the reason it's called tar plant is because it's a plant that comes up at the end of summer in order, and there's no rain and there's no water in Santa Cruz in July, right? So this plant has developed its own little special way through its evolutionary history of millions of years, probably. And it has a resinous outer coating.
Sticky.
So if you touch it, it's sticky. It's a sticky plant.
Hence the tar plant name.
Hence the
Why
tar
should
plant.
We give if a damn called, about this?
Yeah,
does it have
no,
any
if
use?
It was, if
mean,
it was a
you
panda,
use it for anything?
Is if it was a panda or a redwood tree or a poppy, people
right.
might get excited. But it's called the tar plant, and so people are well. But anyway, the reason, my guess is, and this is speculation, and I'm looking forward to this July season, my guess is it may have been a combination of 3 years of drought.
For whatever reason.
Well, the tar plant root has to go down and get its water.
Why should we care about the tar plant?
Oh, that's a good question.
Well, that's a good question. There's two.
We care about it because it was here before human beings, because it is a living species. It may not be a panda or a whale or a wolf, but it is unique. It's unique life, and it's not just a tar plant, but its associated web of life. There are three different tarweedy species that grow on Coastal Terrace Prairie land, and Mike and I were both agreeing earlier, that's when we were whispering, only 98.5% of California's original Coastal Terrace Prairie has been developed or disappeared or degraded. Arana Gulch is a fragment of the 1.5% that's left.
Yeah.
So technically, it's not the only coastal.
So, Michael, what about that tar plant? You got something against the tar plant. What's your problem?
Michael, can you let me talk?
Oh, I thought you said Michael.
No.
But
no.
Then you.
So the bike bath would represent about a 2% reduction in the overall tar plant habitat. And the reason I started talking about the state of the health of the tar plant is that the tar plant is not doing well for reasons that obviously have nothing to do with the bike path. It seems like the prime thing that it needs is more either grazing or some other kind of interaction. My understanding is it was co-evolved with ungulates. So, for example, mm-hmm. the tar plant at the Watsonville Airport, which gets mowed regularly and has all kinds of, you know, mechanized activity over it, is doing fabulously well. So, So I do care about the tar plant, possibly in slightly different ways from other environmentalists, but, you know, I agree with a lot of what Gene said. But I don't feel like, I feel like pitting the bike path against the tar plant is an artificial... it's an artificial controversy or an artificial contradiction, because the bike path would have a very small negative impact on the tar plant habitat. It's 2%, like I said, whereas there are lots of other things that we could have already been doing and could do in the future that would actually allow the tar plant to thrive. So that, I think it's important people realize that. Some of the rhetoric is, you know, if you pave the bike plant, you kill the tar plant. Well, the tar plant's not doing well. It doesn't have anything to do with the bike
path. Well, alternatively, is there not a claim that if this bike path does not go forward, there won't be any caring for the tar plant, which would come with financial assistance from the Brommer-Broadway bike path? And that's one of the claims of those who are saying, we need the path because that will, in essence, save the tar plant because of this grazing.
May I take that one?
Sure. Go ahead, Jane.
Okay.
Although we have a caller.
I'll do this really quickly. Parks and Recreation Department in the city of Santa Cruz has been managing at for tar plant since 1996 at Arana Gulch. The last time I talked to Steve Hammack, who's now gone, they were spending about $10,000 a year. Scott who mentioned that they have this property that they have this property that they are going. Do you want to go ahead and get it?
Let's take the caller. Idea. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio with all of us.
Well, it's nice to hear Gene and Micah in the same room talking about a very important issue that's occurring in my backyard.
And it's nice to hear you, Uncle Dennis. And, of course, we'll be hearing a little too much of you for the next 3 hours when you come into the studio. But welcome.
Well, I'd like to weigh in with my two cents here, and that whereas Micah claims that the bike path in Arana Gulch will only take 2% of the tar plant's habitat, whatever that means, wherever he got those statistics, that's 2% too much. The real issue is, can the bike path be somewhere else, away from the tar plant? And the answer is yes. So there's no need to have a bicycle path through Arana Gulch. There are other places to put a bicycle path, and it is unfair to the tar plant and to those of us who want to see it continue to grow there, whether it grows well or grows poorly, is something that we'll have to manage in the future. But to take 2% of its extremely limited and habitat away is something that I won't stand for. The Sierra Club Santa Cruz group will not stand for. And I believe the Coastal Commission, in its final determination, will not stand for it either.
You mean even the new makeup of the Sierra Club, in which there was a recent election, apparently, that changed its makeup?
Well, the bottom line is that the three new elected members, even if they voted as a block and one of them is not actually a member of that block, do not have a majority of the executive committee of the Santa Cruz group of the Sierra Club.
Well, it's my understanding the Sierra Club looked at this project about 15 years ago. So when we got behind some new members of the Sierra Club executive committee, we weren't assuming there'd be some block voting. We thought there'd be an open discussion. People would look at the new plans, which are much less
People power pushed a group, supported a bunch of people who ousted the old guard in the Sierra Club in recent elections. Is that
well,
right?
Ousted. Right. Well, three
some
members
of
the executive committee were up for re-election.
They were all.
Sierra Club is going to, you know, carefully and periodically examine different issues. So
well,
I'm not sitting here saying we're going to try to make sure that, you know, the Sierra Club gets reformed or whatever. But I also think it doesn't behoove you to say the opposite.
But well, anyway. What I'm saying is that, as of now, the Sierra Club Santa Cruz group position is that there be no bicycle bridge and no bicycle path in Arana Gulch.
I hear you on that.
And we support having a bicycle path somewhere else.
Where else?
Now, the top candidate right now for the easiest place to put in a bicycle path is Frederick Street Park. The number two place is the recently purchased railroad right-of-way.
So those are two proposals. Gene, I know you want to say something, but should we allow Micah to respond to his two proposals?
Sure.
since he has got about number three and one. Or three and a half.
You'll come back to me, right?
I will come back to you.
Well, I'm going to dog off now continue getting ready for my show.
Thanks, Dennis.
And,
good to hear your voice,
Dennis. I'll continue to listen to the comments on air.
Thanks a lot, Dennis.
My bud, Dennis. Actually, I just quickly, while it's fresh in my mind, something he said? That'll be real quick, I promise.
You have 30 seconds.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The Sierra Club bases its decisions, the local group bases its decisions on national policy and the law. And the Sierra Club can only go by the law, which is the Federal Endangered Species Act, the California State Endangered Species Act, the California Coastal Commission, and national club policies. We have a campaign for resilient habitats now. So I'm in agreement. Let's not talk about what's going to happen to the Sierra Club. I think it's just fine.
Okay, those two proposals, Micah, for alternate places for this path to go.
So the main point is that it's where the path is planned to go is a great place for it to go. And when you talk about, you know, why would anyone want to, you know, how could we affect the tar plant to help human beings get access? We're not talking about the Brooks Range or someplace in Alaska. We're talking about a park that was bought by the city so that human beings could more effectively and in a caring way access natural places, which they can't do right now. There's no way to get to this. To this area. Hold on, let me finish.
Yes, I can.
So as far
Micah,
as the,
there's two entrances into Aranagault. It's not difficult.
I
saw bicyclists and joggers and all kinds of people in there today.
Right. Well,
okay, but
I go there
again,
too,
Micah, you're not really answering my question, which is what about these two alternative proposals?
Right.
Dennis brought up.
So the Frederick Street Park thing is not. It's not a good bike path. It would have hairpin turns. It'd be very steep. It would be basically like a wheelchair ramp, like what you have at the post office. So, you know, when we talk about 8 to 80 or people pulling trailers or strollers or whatever, we looked at that alternative. Is it better than nesting? Yes, but it doesn't fulfill the project goals of the project, which is to allow people to transport themselves, as I said, 8 to 80 in a way that feels inviting to them and also gives access to this open
space.
And
the other proposal?
And the rail trail proposal we're pushing really hard for.
So that is a good alternative in your view?
Well, I mean, I don't want to call it an alternative. I want both of those projects. Like I said, we want an interconnected web of bicycle pedestrian projects throughout the county. I mean, will it take away some of the utility of Broadway Bomber? Sure, you know, because you'll be able to use that, and that'll be great. But we still think Broadway Bomber will be a great project. So we're going to keep pushing hard for that one, hopefully with Gene and Dennis and everyone else. And hopefully in the end we'll get both. So that's our view about the rail trail. Let me just bring back to – it was really interesting what Gene said in her 30 seconds about – science and the Sierra Club. So the Sierra
the
Club
law.
Holds... Well, so the Coastal Commission staff, who are in charge of the Coastal Commission law, at least interpreting it for the commissioners, have come out for the project because they say that it has an insignificant, or some they have some other scientific term, effect on the habitat.
The Coastal Commission has not
come out. The Coastal Commission staff, not the commissioners.
Oh, staff.
The staff, who are made up of the biologists who interpret the law, have come out in favor of the proposal because they think that it's not bad enough for the habitat that it should go through. So the staff come out, have recommended for it. The Sierra Club is an example of a great environmental organization, which I think, you know, most of us here are members of, has two different priorities. They have a priority to protect habitat, which I thoroughly agree with, and they have a huge priority right now to, quote, end the use of oil and prevent global warming, which is more the focus on where I'm at. So the question is, do we, and it's a reasonable question for reasonable people to disagree, as you see here tonight, but do we really pay attention to getting off oil, to dealing with global warming, by making different types of facilities that people can use if we're looking at a 2% reduction in habitat? I think that's a good trade-off. I really do. I don't think a 2% reduction in a habitat is the end of the world. I'd like to see that thing grazed. I'd like to see it taken care of. But we definitely have two different goals here, and the Sierra Club has two different goals. It's not a unilateral organization, I hope. I hope it does cares about things other than habitat.
Gene wants to say something, but I think Mike was also sort of scurrying around trying to say something. Mike, do you have anything you want to... No. Go ahead, Gene.
Yeah. I'm going to go soon.
Micah has to leave here pretty quick. Micah, earlier I heard you say that that it wasn't going to pave over critical habitat of the tar plant. And I'm glad to hear that you're saying now it is going to pave critical habitat. Well, a pavement is a... Is a habitat impact? Yes, yes. Nothing can ever grow where the pavement is. Not only that, earlier I heard you say that the project has changed and it's actually better and smaller. This is not true. The Broadway Bromer pavement project has now been joined by another pavement project from the existing access at Agnes Street, another 12-foot wide footprint paved, 8-foot wide pavement, 2-foot wide shoulders, gravel each side, that's going to come and meet Broadway Bromer. The other thing that I want to say very quickly is Friends of Arana Gulch provided an alternative to create access for residents with mobility impairment way back in 2005-2006 when the city was first doing a scoping session on what to do for in the Arana Gulch draft master plan. And we had yet another one last fall after the Coastal Commission, which did not grant the permit to do this, but said go back and come back with some changes for us. We had another one in which we suggested an alternative that had pathways that were partly paved, partly boardwalk, depending on whether it's riparian, around the entire perimeter of Arana Gulch that would allow for access from Agnes Street from the north, from the harbor from the south, where there is already parking for handicapped. We provided that alternative. The only thing that alternative did not have was a bridge over Hageman Creek, a bridge over Arana Creek, and a paved bicycle route through there. So Friends of Arana Gulch has provided an alternative plan for allowing access upgrade.
What did the disabled community say about that?
They don't want to have to go in SoCal. So she's talking about access from Agnes.
They didn't want to. They wanted to travel on in their wheelchairs all the way from where, I don't know.
From where they live in the neighborhood on the east side of Santa Cruz.
No, which is on Frederick, the La Posada folks who live on Frederick Street. And we measured, you can go to Google Maps and you can measure the distance. The distance going on Soquel, where there are sidewalks, and coming back down a street that doesn't have any traffic on it, was less than a tenth of a percent less than going.
However, they did not want that. They prefer the path as
they didn't
Micah's
see
described.
That alternative.
They did.
They did not see
but
that
you,
alternative.
You presented that to them at their meeting with the Seniors and Disabled Committee.
No, that was the second alternative we created. The alternative that we presented the first time was our alternative from 2005 and 2006, which brought them in only partway into the center of the
So everything hasn't quite been presented, but one of the alternatives was not enough for them. Maybe the second one would be. Micah, I know you were only going to stay here for an hour, and you've gone an hour and 15 minutes.
Right.
And I was only going to allow an hour, actually half an hour, as discussion of this issue. And it's gotten rather broad. You know, I should probably ask people to link this up to low-income people and say why anybody should give a damn either about the tar plant or the bike path in terms of this issue. I mean, vast amounts of money are being spent on services that have very little to do with low-income people, as far as I can see. And, caller, you're going to have to wait because Micah's got the last 3 minutes here.
I am low-income, Robert.
So am I.
Yes, I am.
But you're not homeless, and we're doing really low-income people. Yeah.
Right. The reason the Live Oaks Center has come out for the project, and Tony Madrigal, whose primary concern is working-class people, is that it provides access for people that are lacking access to natural areas and provides a transportation alternative for people without cars that feels appropriate. Gene and Michael, I think Michael, definitely Gene has talked about three blocks here, three blocks there. The point is that people should have a right to go places without feeling like they're second-class citizens and without having to pick up their bikes and bring them over steps or to deal with the specter of cars, whether it's safe or not, because I feel safe too, Michael, right, in SoCal. The point is that people don't want to feel like they, in order to ride their bikes, they have to deal with the dangerous and awful public environment of cars on SoCal and other streets. So, and the question, and usually we're all in support of those. I know Gene supports all kinds of bike facilities and everyone else does too. In this particular case, we have a trade-off here. We have a slight impact on a sensitive habitat with a bike path so as to help people have access both to the park itself, which is bought by the people of the city of Santa Cruz, and as a way to create a green commute alternative to get from Santa Cruz to Live Oak. So I think it's worth it, but I understand why people disagree. It is a trade-off. And thanks for giving me that last call. I got to get back to my family, but it's been a good discussion. I totally appreciate, like you said in the beginning, Gene, you know, the idea that reasonable people can disagree and do it reasonably.
Yeah,
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I do too, Micah.
The last caller was Scott calling in again saying that, Micah, you felt you didn't respond to the issue that Uncle Dennis raised about a bridge rather than a switchback, because I think that's what Dennis was talking about. And
Dennis was talking about a switchback, I think.
You think he was talking? Well, yeah. All right, so we've reached a point where for those who want to further pursue this issue, they can go to the Friends of the Arena Gulch or People Power. Both of the websites have some interesting discussions on there, and it's more depth, unfortunately, than we've been able to cover here. Micah, before you go, and we have another caller, or perhaps an old favorite caller, and Jill is,
just don't call me late for lunch.
I'll just let you talk. Go ahead.
It doesn't have to come down to a choice.
You're on free radio,
between,
but hang on a second.
It doesn't have to be a choice between bicycling. Well, first of all, there's access into Arana Gulch. There's plenty of ways to go into Arana Gulch, and Robert, I would invite you to just come walk there sometime. It's your green belt. It's your place. And in terms of what it may or may not mean to you, why don't you just, I'll invite you to come on a walk with me there and just take a walk around. What it is it's like a lung. It's a way for anyone, and it doesn't matter how much money you have, how little money you do not have. It is a free place to breathe in life and say, you know, this is part of what is being human. Mm. And being human means that there's empathy from one human to another, and from one human to a non-human critter. And there's something very uplifting about knowing that
we do have a caller who's listening that may have a comment for
you. Yeah, that you can go to that place, no matter whether you have a bicycle, whatever it is, you can go there. There's no dollar amount connected to it.
Right. Now, caller, are you with us here?
Yes, I am.
And did you want to comment?
My comment's a response to Micah's basically saying what my idea for Frederick Street Park is. There is a way to put in a bicycle path that does not involve hairpin turns or switchbacks, and would it be at a fairly low grade?
Hmm.
It would not be ADA compliant, which means there would have to be an ADA facility such as an elevator at that location to handle people who are mobility challenged.
Uh-huh.
But for bicycles, Frederick Street Park can be integrated into the harbor bicycle paths without the use of switchbacks and without the loss of the picnic area and a lot of other things that Frederick Street Park has that are very good.
I think that was Scott's point, too, I believe.
Yeah. So it can be done at Frederick Street Park, and it doesn't have to take place on top of an endangered species habitat area, as it does if you put the bridge across the Hagaman Gulch.
Yeah, but who cares about that sticky tar plant anyway, Dennis?
Well, as Gene pointed out, it's a living, breathing organism, and it has been highly impacted by human overpopulation, human development, and all the other things that humans do without caring for the world around them. And it's time we stopped thinking and started protecting wild plants like the tar plant. My point was just to say that there is a way to put a bicycle path through Frederick Street Park without hairpins.
Gotcha.
There, you know,
you made your point.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Dennis. Yeah, and, you know, of course, the other issue that has been raised by Scott at different points is that the police department can use this as a means of harassing homeless people who actually camp in the area in there, although I don't think that you are big fans of campers in the Arana Gulch area.
You know, the campers in Arana Gulch are not up on tar plant habitat.
They tend to nestle in just off of Capitola Road sidewalk down near the creek in the riparian zone. And the concern that the whole issue that somehow or other if these bike projects were put through, then the homeless would flee because they don't want to be seen. My care is, and there's no enforcement now in Arana Gulch. I don't use the camping, the homelessness, and unfortunately, Robert, the incredible amount of trash and litter that goes with it, that I care about. But I don't use that as, I don't talk about that. That's separate.
But it's an issue that we talk about.
I know. I understand that.
And it's an important issue, but both from the environmentalist point of view and from the point of view of homeless people. In fact, I think if there were some educational outreach done about the tar plant to low-income, really low-income campers, you know, you might have some sympathetic response from them.
Well, let's talk about talking about that one of these days. Shall we
talk about it now if you want? Although you didn't come prepared to talk on that subject.
Oh, no. I'm going to tell you something about me. Most people know this. I have an opinion about everything.
So what we're talking about here is...
But I am tired. I'll tell you something. I got up early this morning. I took time off from work. I got up early so that I could walk to the Regional Transportation Commission meeting. That's a two-mile walk for me. I love it. Mm-hmm. I think it's what it helps me to keep my girly figure at 66 years of age.
What a babe, folks.
Yeah, thank you, dear. But I did walk.
This could be one of your admirers.
Yeah, I did walk down there, and I walked early and sat there for 2 hours before they would call on us, and I really am tired.
So is this a question for the tired Jean?
It's a radio broadcast hug, because I know tired.
You know tired.
Yeah, but I called because...
Who's this?
You know, a few
Sounds
minutes
like
ago, Gene offered you a walk through the Arana.
Uh-huh.
See how cool it is?
You ever think that maybe I'm more tired than Gene is?
No.
Yeah, well so what's your point, Paul?
I don't know whether you're tired or untired. What I wanted to say is, maybe she'd be willing to extend that invite to two or three people that are both environmentalists and homeless right now.
She's nodding.
I will take anyone who wants to go see Arana Gulch and know the magic of this little island of biodiversity right smack dab in the middle of our lives.
You know, maybe you could provide a map of where the tar plant, what it looks like, how people can, have particular regard for it, who are, survival campers.
Right.
And also, I've often suggested the city provide, instead of, criminalizing camping, that they provide educational classes on appropriate camping and tidy camping.
I don't want the city to do it, but if we could get them to underwrite the principals to do it, like a biologist or a camper.
Yeah.
Well, better than camping tickets, let's put it that way.
I have a dual goal. My goal, of course, is to protect this special place, and the other goal is, wouldn't it be wonderful if people had a regular bed to sleep in at night? And that's something.
Yeah.
But I will take you up on your. Robert knows how to get a hold of me, and anyone who wants to take a walk in Arana Gulch and get its glad tidings, I'm happy to do that. And I am too tired to go on tonight, Robert. But I want to thank you again.
Hey, no problem.
This has been.
Thank you for a great show.
Yes, I want to say the same thing. I have been on a couple of radio programs before where we talked about Arana Gulch, and never have I felt that the host. That's you, had an ability to hear your guests and a good ability to ask questions back, having absorbed that. This has just been an absolute pleasure, and I mean that.
With all
really
of my
sincerely.
17 minutes of preparation,
Friends of Arana Gulch, just Google it. And, and people can Google for Santa Cruz tar plant, and it'll go to Google where it shows pictures, and you can get some gorgeous pictures of
it.
Maybe
we can talk again about the issue that I think concerns a lot of our particular listeners about how can people engage in low-impact camping in a way that, and how can the city facilitate this by, for example, providing trash cans, dumpsters, maps, I don't know, and different kinds of possibilities. And I'm going to let you go because you do, you don't look that tired, actually,
I'm
but
tired.
You probably are. So I'll let you hit the road. And anything
thanks
you want to say,
much.
Mike, before you take off? Or?
I just want to underscore the idea of access. Arana Gulch is a little jewel in the middle of all of our urban development that is there all the time. It's access. It's accessible to everyone from north and south. If you want to drive there,
east
there's plenty
west.
Of parking places. If you want to walk there, if you want to bicycle there, you can do that right now. And we were just out there today. And it's a place where you can go out there and you can stand in the prairie surrounded by oak trees and the rest of the city drops away.
It disappears.
It goes away and you're just there with the natural environment. And that is something that's priceless in today's world, and I think that's why it's a popular place and why it doesn't need development.
Thank you. We've been talking with Mike Lewis and with Gene
Brocklebank.
Thank you, Gene Brocklebank.
Thank
and, of
you,
course, that was Micah Posner earlier. Thank you both, and thanks to listeners. Thanks to Scott Graham and Uncle Dennis Davey for calling in. And we'll talk again, probably on this issue, maybe again on the actual topic that I usually cover, which would be helpful, I think, and might please our regular listeners. What have I got? Well, I was going to actually, as I said, this is going to be supposed to be a much shorter segment. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We've got about half an hour left, and I'm going to play some street interviews, I think. And I'll give you kind of a preview of what's coming up on Sunday. Sunday we have a longer show, so there's more opportunity for doing different things, provided I can control my show. Again, as I kind of wish I'd prepared a little better and also kind of tried to compact it more. But, you know, I think there was some interesting dialogue that went back and forth on these issues, and I'm glad people had a chance to talk, even though it's... Again, the reason I spend so much time talking about homeless issues here is I don't think it gets talked about elsewhere much, at least not from the perspective that I have and not the kinds of information that I give. But what I've got, what I had in mind before actually getting on the air here today, and did make a few notes on this subject. Let me take a look at my notes. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff about the very issue we talked about online, which I didn't have a chance to really fully grok, if you will. And at some point, maybe I will. But again, my issue has been a little different. Bob LaMonica is an activist who's been calling the show with some regularity in the past and has been recently been coming to Huff meetings. He's been concerned a lot about the city attacks on DIY last night, the do-it-yourself walk that has become a tradition over the last 5 years, where people just come together in costumes with kids and families and music, and they walk down Pacific Avenue without a permit. Imagine that. You know, and they take care of things themselves. They don't ask for the police to help them. They just do it. And there's nary a problem, usually. I mean, particularly compared to the huge amounts of alcohol that are consumed later in the evening and the tens of thousands of dollars and all the barricades that are set up later at night. Bob has been concerned that, and I think a lot of us have been concerned, that there have been attacks, bureaucratic attacks on this event and other events like what's called the Gorilla Drive-In, which is the event where people watch movies that are shown on the edge, on the sides of buildings or in public parks, free movies. Again, these are events that are open to people who are poor and low income or no income, as the case may be, houseless, if you will, displaced urban residents, if you will, however you want to call homeless folks. Anyway, Bob has been trying to get the Downtown Association on board with protection for and official endorsement of, or at least a cessation of attacks on. I think he wants to get a. He wants them to provide some kind of. He wants to make a presentation to the Downtown Association's Board of Directors, and he's asked to do that for some time. Chip has finally agreed to put him on the agenda in April. Bob is kind of a campaigner on some of these rights issues. For example, he wants the ACLU to take up issues of, for example, the. Attacks on street performers, where Becky Johnson, myself,
Robert Blind Bear Facer have all been convicted of singing subversive songs downtown under the unnecessarily disturbing noise ordinance in a really remarkable trial, which we're still appealing that decision, but given the collegial nature of the judges around here, who all seem to stick together pretty closely, we don't. There's not a lot of hope on that, and maybe talking more about that issue and others on Sunday. Another thing that I was reviewing after Craig Canada, who's a medical marijuana activist, came on my show on Monday, I should say on Sunday, at the very beginning of the show, and he announced he has his own show from 6 to 8 on Sunday evenings, which I encourage people to listen to. It's called Canada on Cannabis, euphoniously enough. I've looked up his website. He has a palmspringsbum.org/blog website, which I recommend people check out. Just Google for Palm Springs Bum. And he's really done a lot of research on, and has got some interesting links and discussion of Proposition 19. That was the proposition, as you may remember, that failed in the last election fairly narrowly, which would have legalized an ounce of marijuana, but provoked a lot of controversy in the medical marijuana community because it didn't specifically protect medical marijuana people in the way that a lot of medical marijuana people felt they should have been protected. And I've done some more research on that and done some further analysis. It's kind of a little bit, you know, disinterring a corpse to look into it. But on the other hand, it's perhaps cautionary for hopefully what will come up again in 2012 might be a better initiative, assuming that we're all around in 2012 and not blown to smithereens by, you know, some sort of nuclear accidents that have been caused by the, well, U.S. Well, we have. I think we continue to have a really dangerous nuclear situation throughout the world. Which, when I think, when the people get their hands on the government, it's a good thing. But will the United States government and its little proxies throughout the world accept this, or will they go Gaddafi on us? I don't know, or Daffy Gaddafi, as I call it. I also was going to do an update. I was going to do an update on a number of other issues, for example, the Middle Eastern revolutions that are happening, and they are continuing to happen, whether it's Oman or Bahrain or Yemen or Jordan or even Iran is experiencing popular tumult. And it's really, I think, a very positive thing. Of course, I'm not there. I'm not getting beaten, arrested, and shot, and I'm not suffering the kinds of food shortages and rampant police repression that Libyans are getting bombed from the air and so forth. But I think that, for me, it's heartening, and I think it needs to be followed more closely, and I'm glad it is, even as we look in Wisconsin. That was another thing I was going to cover. It looks like the judge is considering clearing Wisconsin Capitol protesters away. There was a story on Reuters today about a draft court order the demonstrators should leave, but it was not issued after both the state and the union attorneys argued against it, but there is a ruling expected today. It may have actually happened. The Wisconsin governor, Scott Walker, having already in January reportedly given away all kinds of tax benefits to corporations, now wants to cut back not just union wages and benefits. He also wants to cut back collective bargaining and to eliminate it for public employees. And, of course, there was massive occupation of the Capitol for a couple of weeks. And they claimed they had to clean the Capitol building, and they were kind of hustling everybody out of there. And the judge is weighing whether state officials overstepped their bounds by restricting protesters' access to the state Capitol, where they were ordered out on a moment's notice Wednesday evening before. And the judge was about to grant this order, but he was talked out of it, apparently, by the state and union attorneys. Dane County Circuit Judge John Albert has been listening to several days of testimony on whether he should make a temporary court order ensuring full public access to the building
making it permanent. He was expected to rule on the matter Thursday. He told the packed courtroom shortly after 6, I'm obviously reading from the story, that he wanted to test the State Department administration's contention that building access would return to normal quickly if the protesters who have spent the last 2 weeks sleeping overnight in the rotunda left. So they're claiming they can't have the people sleeping there because it limits public access. Of course, it's the public that's sleeping there, and that's what's so ironic, and of course this, frankly, to me, sounds like a bunch of horse shit. It's similar to what they do, you know, in Tahrir Square. They got rid of people by sending in gangs of thugs with whips on camels. You know, here in Wisconsin, our country, they do it with court orders. And, of course, unions have always been, and laborers have been the butt of court orders. Injunctions were famous for stopping strikes in the 20s and for time immemorial before that. In the studio with me, I have a new guest who's just... come slouching in. She actually called in earlier. That's Linda LeMaster, who's I always introduce her as the chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, or FORCE, as it was called in its own day. And actually, the group came up with some very good resolutions. Of course, they also siphoned off a lot of activist energy, and as a consequence, the resolutions, the most important ones, have lain dead and undealt with.
But I don't share your analysis entirely.
Linda Press will give her own thoughts on that. But that's another... Glad to have you in the studio again, Linda, and welcome to the 21 remaining minutes of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, you're welcome. I would have come in sooner, but you had a hot show going. I'm not going to walk in on that. It was great.
Well, I'm
that
glad...
That was a good show.
A lot of people liked it. As I said, it's not really my meat, and I don't really feel that I felt enough preparation time to give it the full... incisive edge that I might have given.
But some important stuff got out that you don't hear transcribed in those stupid-ass meetings.
Well, anyway, in Wisconsin, true enough, hopefully, this is a... I was going to present more specifics about what's going on there, and actually, this story is a little out of date because it's probably already... a new decision has probably happened in Wisconsin. Maybe I'll talk about that on Sunday. It looks like activists... Most of the protesters are gone, it looks like, from the Wisconsin state capitol, but I'm not sure. Maybe they've returned. I hope they have. I think they need to. And I've always had the cynical view that the unions come in, do a protest, and then leave, though I understand it that it was the union rank and file that insisted on this protest, and that the bosses there, the union bosses, didn't really want to do it, as frequently the case in this, and traditionally... when you have labor uprisings, people who have the cushy positions don't want to risk it because they've got their positions to maintain and preserve. So this hearing was resumed on Thursday afternoon today, and it's already over. It probably was over several hours ago because it's 2 hours later in Wisconsin than it is here. And we'll hear hopefully more about that probably on Democracy Now! Tomorrow. It'll probably be coming up. That's a story you can check out about Wisconsin online if you'd like. There was a very funny section on the Colbert about which had Glenn Greenwald, who is a really articulate defender of free speech on Salon.com, particularly concerned with Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, Bradley Manning. Who is the fellow who is now charged with, 22 felony counts of, conspiring with the enemy is the latest for essentially, I guess the enemy being the American people, giving them the information that they need to see what the hell is going on behind the curtain of, the gunpowder curtain, do we call it? I don't know what we're going to call it, the curtain of, the arms manufacturers and the weapons lobbies and the politicians and the Democratic and Republican Party hacks that are ruining the country and murdering people all over the globe. You might, if not directly, then through their proxies. I mean, you saw a story in today's Chronicle about 9 Afghani kids shot down by helicopters from the U.S. And actually General Petraeus, or Betrayus, as he was called several years ago, but when the Democrats hastily apologized for that one, he was apologizing for having, killed these 9 kids, aged 9 to 15. He was really sorry about that. Of course, it was, the second or third time it's happened in 2 or 3 weeks. And this is just, it's kind of grotesque. If it happened in Santa Cruz, Take Back Santa Cruz would be ranting and raving and hopefully not blaming the homeless. I'd like to think they wouldn't be. But, you know, people will be out there on the streets really, you know, hopefully raising the roof. And that's what, of course, in Afghanistan, you have a civil war going on. And that's one of the reasons you have a civil war is foreign occupation. 9 years of foreign occupation since 2000. Well, actually, 10 years since 2001, 9.5 years. Again, the pretext being the Al-Qaeda, the bombing of the World Trade Center. A nefarious and vicious crime against civilians, although one admittedly, which perhaps Malcolm X would call chickens coming home to roost, given U.S. foreign policy abroad in the Middle East. And as we can see, chickens are coming home to roost throughout the Middle East and the rebellions across the North Africa that are happening, one after one, country after country. Anyway, there's a funny bit where Colbert interviews Glenn Greenwald. In fact, I might be able to still play it. I'm going to see if I can pull it up on the computer here. I'm having trouble with the getting a Wi-Fi in the studio here, but there is another way to go. So, Linda, anything you want to report on what's going on outside?
You asked me to come in because I have to go to court tomorrow.
That's right. You have this, you're one of these peace camp scofflaws who want to sleep outside on steps and hang around in public places with your pillow. Why don't you just get a room, Linda? What's the deal here?
Well, you know, people who have rooms like to hang out with their friends and go out in public and see what's going on in town. I don't get the punchline.
The punchline is...
this mic is jumping off.
My microphone doesn't seem to like me. The punchline is that, you know, we know that... Well, make sure the punchline is why is a bunch of city and county money being wasted on prosecutions of you and others for peaceful protest, which involved sleeping in front of the county building or the city hall at different points throughout the summer. And
well, that's what I would like to know. But I can say that at least in terms of how they communicate with people, the county's sheriffs seem to understand they work for somebody, and they seem to treat even their homeless citizens with a kind of equal kind of respect. They weren't quite as reactive, in my opinion, as most of the city cops at the nighttime beats during those weeks, or actually during those months, I should say. But that's just my opinion.
What's happening tomorrow, Linda? What's going on?
Oh, I have to go to court and watch this demurring of the law that describes lodging. 647E, which you were educating me a little bit about its history, its use. And I'd also read something about in San Francisco. So I don't know how it's going to go. It depends on the judge. He's a woman. It's in Department 1 at 10 o'clock. But, in fact, I haven't even seen the thing. But afterwards, I have an announcement to make to anybody there and interested after court, immediately after court.
So, as I understand it, what this means is, I believe you had a hack lawyer whose name is Mark Garver, who wouldn't return your phone calls, wouldn't return mine, didn't inform you he was taking this issue to court in the form he did because you were actually trying to find another attorney, is my understanding. We were actually, a number of us, trying to find you another attorney. This is a guy who initially didn't file any papers for this so-called demur. A demur, what that means, by the way, for those who aren't legal eagles, is essentially it challenges the constitutionality of the law, or it challenges the fact that the claim that there is any real valid charge against you to even be considered in court. That's what a demurrer generally does, is a demurrer will do that with any particular charge. It will say, you know, this charge is either improperly formed, or the law in which it's based is unconstitutional on its face or as applied. And that's...
It's sort of like saying, so what? Back to what you've been accused of, or what the court is determined.
Well, it's a way, before you enter a plea, usually you come to court and you say guilty, not guilty, or I don't contest the charge, nolo contendere. This is before you enter a plea. You say, I don't have to enter a plea. There's not a valid charge here, so take it away. And that is something that, you know, this charge was filed against you, I guess, way back in what, November?
Was it August?
Well, no, you were arrested in August, but the charge wasn't filed until November, I think, or October.
Right. I didn't follow that. Right. You did. Thank you for that.
Something like that. So in any case, and then Garver had many, many weeks to get this together, refused to get back to you, refused to get back to me when I called. This is a public defender named Mark Garver. Please write it down. If you ever get him, immediately file a Marsden motion to dismiss him, please.
Well, you know, I have to object. I was going to just avoid your excoriating of who he is, but he's not the worst one I've ever had from that particular PD office.
There are plenty of bad ones, but the ones I talk about are the ones whose cases come up before me in the most immediate sense.
He's going to be arguing this demurrer tomorrow, so anybody who's got the time to kill, come down to court. And
I don't think he's going to be doing diddly squat. I think he's going to be doing the minimum that he's going to be able to do. He had to go to Ed Fry to even learn about the demurrer.
I don't believe that.
You know, well, that's what
I think there's something lost in translation.
Sorry, that's what Ed Fry told me. But in any case, you know, I think people should definitely go at 10 a.m. and Department 1, is it?
Department 1, yeah.
Tomorrow to hear this guy if they want to. He, of course, will be found. They will dismiss his argument, and he will let it go. I don't think they'll even bother to try to appeal it, even though other people are trying to appeal a similar demurrer that Ed Fry filed on behalf of himself and five other defendants in the neighboring court of Judge Gallagher. This is going to go. Your case will be in the court of Judge Connolly, as I understand it. So. Yeah, you may be getting a new attorney who actually will do something on your behalf, although apparently too late to try to file a demurrer.
Well, it's not that important. You know, this thing is not going to be left up to these kind of judges. This lady's a new person. She apologizes and scratches her head during her explanations every time.
Talking about Judge Connolly.
She makes this long and embarrassed disclaimer that she has to tell us who elected her judge just because she's relatively green during her introduction. I don't think this should be the final say, but I mean, I'm just talking as a human being using English, not as a lawyer, but I won't be done with it if she doesn't pay attention at least. If he has nothing further to say than where Ed or other attorneys in other cities have left it, then it's not her fault. But if she just doesn't deal with it, like most of the judges I've seen in this county building, in the courthouse, that won't be the end of it for me.
Well, I mean, it could be the end of it for anybody, but unfortunately it'll be the end of it for everybody who happens. It'll be the end of it for you in your case.
The whole
unless you actually have an attorney who's willing to appeal her judgment.
The whole idea that you can flip the fucking Constitution around backwards because the person it's being measured against is a homeless person is not acceptable to me in any conflagration of the law.
But it is acceptable to the judges of the Santa Cruz courts.
Yeah, but I might have a louder mouth than they do. We'll see.
I don't think so.
Remains to be seen.
I doubt it. Not in court, not if you want to avoid contempt of court, which is, but
I'm not going to get in any more trouble in court.
I'm not saying you necessarily shouldn't, Linda, but I think that you know that perhaps we'll hear your perspective tomorrow if people want to show up in front of Department 1 and then hear your. I guess you thought you're going to see if something to say after the court.
I want to go out to the atrium between the buildings, and I have an announcement of my own just pertaining to the original thing, which was a charge for so-called lodging, which isn't defined anywhere in the law that I can find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're referring to 647E of the Penal Code, which makes it illegal to lodge in any place without the permission of the owner or its agent. It's a part of the it's not even a trespass law. It's a part of the disorderly conduct statute, which has all kinds of sections involving drunk in public and so forth. There's some such things. But this one's one that's used a lot against homeless people and generally isn't taken to trial. I've been arrested under it several times in different cities, and I've never been taken me to trial. Of course, I was within large groups of rather well-organized, many of them middle-class protesters, and that may be the reason that didn't happen.
Well, also, you look at how many people got these tickets and how many have ended up able to even defend themselves in court and still have charges. I would say they don't take it to court very often. Right here, you can see it.
I've seen no people who have. It is taken to court a lot. In fact, every single charge, every person who's arrested, I believe, has been either taken to court or now faces a failure to appear. So I think you're mistaken in that regard.
Well, I've seen a lot thrown out in a courtroom setting.
Oh, really?
You've more seen tickets thrown out.
I have never seen. I have never seen a. On one occasion, I've seen a 647E charge of this Peace Camp 2010 thrown out. All their cases have either gone to court or gone to warrant, as far as I know. So
I saw them thrown out in the interest of justice and secondarily
one case,
because
Frank
justice
Lopez.
Money is more important.
Frank Lopez.
Let me say this:
sure.
Because justice is more important, not as important as money, in the interest of Prop 36, they just vacuum clean all these other things.
I think you're talking about two cases out of 50. But unless you have,
I've seen three different guys. I don't know all three of them.
Well, I've seen many, many cases have gone
I'm
to
not,
court.
I,
My point with point, Linda, is that they don't usually throw these cases out. They usually, in Santa Cruz, for some bizarre reason, they don't mind. Well, they issue warrants for them. They certainly file the charges. Now, once you get to court, who knows what's going to happen, and we'll see what happens in your
so
case.
So you're saying they've been doing this for the past whatever years?
No, I've been doing this for the past whatever months.
Oh.
This
thing, that's just Peace Camp. I thought you meant maybe
that's
Tom
what I was
and
talking
Andy
about.
Got them or something.
Nobody gets these charges. They aren't even filed, and people are not arrested under them. They use other charges. This is a special charge cooked up against you and Peace Camp 2010 people. Here's something from, it might be a little bit lighter, although in some ways it's heavier. Julian Assange is, of course, the WikiLeaks co-founder, is facing deportation to Sweden from England. Bradley Manning, of course, recently, as I mentioned before, has got all kinds of heavy charges filed against him for letting the American public, or allegedly letting the American public, know what's going on with, you know, people like the people in the helicopter gunship who are murdering civilians on the air, on the ground in Iraq. And now apparently you're continuing to do the same in Afghanistan, although General Petraeus has apologized for that. Let's hear a little bit of that, and then I'm going to roll out of here because I've only got about 7 minutes. Linda, anything you want to say before I...
No.
Okay. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30 with more from Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Show is archived at huffsantacruz.org. Let's hear a little from the Colbert Report, which actually looks better if you go online, look at the video, because it's funnier. But I think the soundtrack's probably pretty funny, too.
...intimidated by personal information I made up about him is Salon writer, WikiLeaks supporter, and H.P. Gary blackmail target, Glenn Greenwald. Glenn, thanks so much for coming on. All right. Did you want some toothpaste?
No, I'm fine.
No?
Thank you.
Okay. Very refreshing. Now, Glenn.
Just a little bit of background. Glenn Greenwald apparently was targeted by a number of large law firms because of his advocacy for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. And he's, this is a... A satirical and yet on we call kidding on the square a coverage of this from a humorous but darkly humorous point of view.
Did I get that right? Did I explain the story properly there?
You did. You explained it well.
Okay. Now you're upset about this. What's the big deal? Okay. It's a dangerous world out there. We're at cyber war. If we lose a couple of journalists whose careers are crushed by lies, isn't that a small price to pay?
Couldn't you go back a moment to get some of this? Sorry.
Joining me now to be intimidated by personal information I made up about him is Salon writer, WikiLeaks supporter, and H.P. Gary blackmail target, Glenn Greenwald. Glenn, thanks so much for coming on. All right. Did you want some toothpaste?
No, I'm fine.
No?
Thank you.
Okay. Very refreshing. Now, Glenn, did I get that right? Did I explain the story properly there?
You did. You explained it well.
Okay, now you're upset about this. What's the big deal? Okay, it's a dangerous world out there. We're at cyber war. If we lose a couple of journalists whose careers are crushed by lies, isn't that a small price to pay to keep Bank of America alive?
Well, I think a lot of this is pretty self-evidently pernicious. I mean, threatening journalists.
I don't know what
with...
pernicious means, so I'm assuming you're going to agree with me.
It's pretty bad,
okay.
Is what I mean. I mean, threatening the careers of journalists to deter them from advocating.
Are you
and,
a journalist if you are supporting WikiLeaks? Because WikiLeaks is not journalism, therefore you must be taking yourself out of the journalism game by equating yourself with them. Checkmate.
Yeah, I think that shining light on what governments and corporations do in secret that are just destructive and corrupt is actually pretty much what journalism is supposed to be about. That's what WikiLeaks
journalism
does.
Is taking notes at the press conference.
Putting it through the spell checker.
Absolutely.
And going home.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, And so a lot of this is not just pernicious, the word for the day, but also illegal. A lot of what you described is things
like
blackmail.
How is it illegal? No one's being prosecuted, are they?
No.
No one is being prosecuted.
No, that's true.
Okay,
that's
so not it's
really
not illegal.
That's not really the standard.
No charge, no foul, I believe
right.
is what the saying
so,
is.
You know, I think what is most significant here is that you have these plans that are clearly crossing a legal line, very serious players involved, law firms like Hunton and Williams that are among the most powerful in D.C., and no one at any point said, you know what, maybe this goes a little too far. Maybe we shouldn't be doing any of this. They were all on board with it. And even willing so cavalierly to put a plan like this that clearly proposes illegal steps down onto paper, I think what that clearly shows is this sort of stuff in this world of corporate and government consortium of power is pretty normal. It's par for the course.
But doesn't the government have to walk on the dark side, as Dick Cheney said, if our cyber enemies are walking on the dark side? I mean, you yourself, didn't you break the law first by conspiring with WikiLeaks to make a bank uncomfortable?
I'm pretty sure that making banks uncomfortable, at least yet, is not illegal, and supporting WikiLeaks is not illegal as well. What is illegal are the kinds of things that are involved in this proposal, and ironically, this illustrates why WikiLeaks is so needed. This is a world, this government corporate world, that operates completely opaquely, without any restraints, without any accountability. WikiLeaks is one of the very few entities that's shining a light on what's actually taking place and what the Washington
They're
Post calls
bed.
Top secret America.
They're in bed with people like Anonymous, okay? By the way, are you anonymous?
We're all anonymous, is their saying. But Aaron,
how
Barr
afraid
claims,
should we be of these anonymous people? How well, afraid should I be of these guys? How powerful are they?
I think they're a lot less powerful than.
And Anonymous is the name of the group that attacked the law firm that they attacked them. They did a cyber attack on the law firm that was going after Bank of America hired to go after Glenn Greenwald and others who were critics of the attacks on WikiLeaks, and that's what the anonymous phrase comes from.
The Justice Department, Hunton and Williams, and the internet security firms that are plotting to destroy the careers of people who advocate things that they dislike, and the world of which they're a part is a lot more powerful than Anonymous. What Anonymous did here is what journalists ought to be doing, which is exposing serious corruption and illegality on the part of the nation's most powerful factions.
Do you bank with Bank of America?
I do not bank with Bank of America.
Who do you bank with?
I bank with several institutions that would never be involved in schemes like this.
Do you want to reveal who they are and maybe... Let me give those numbers to H.B. Gary.
I think they probably already have them.
Well, Glenn Greenwald, thank you so
thank
much
you, my pleasure.
For joining us. Salon writer Glenn Greenwald.
And that's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That was a longer segment that actually had more of an explanatory introduction about what the whole background is with this legal firm that is being paid to attempt to ruin the career of Glenn Greenwald and so forth. And it's being done in a really great humorous fashion, but it didn't come across as well as it might, but who knows. Uncle Dennis is coming up next with From the Cream to the Dregs. Perhaps he's brought a couple of tar plants with him. I'm not sure. It's a sticky situation, obviously, Uncle Dennis. I'm going to kind of sign off, and you better grab a disc because I don't have any discs available. I can just keep talking until you put something.
Well, that's probably the best thing to do, Robert.
Just babble on? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Well,
become an ancient country in Mesopotamia.
Babylon. Now, that's actually a city. I've got to clarify that. But your work at the tar plant seems to have dulled your understanding of Middle Eastern geography. We're going to have to work on that. Anyway, here's a little something to go out on. Uncle Dennis has got 3 hours of... I don't know. What's coming up tonight, Uncle Dennis?
The usual music.
Music, attacks on corporate, the corporate sponsors of America who are just trying to help us all. Uncle Dennis is pulling out a little something to drink, fortify himself through the evening. Anyway, here's a little music to wait for Uncle Dennis by.